This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And I'm Orion Samuelson saying good morning and a happy new year on this second day of January. Continuing to check in from the Valley of the Sun in Arizona, where, yes, there has been a lot of sun for the past week, but also frost in the desert. Freezing temperatures nearly every night in the desert and a warm up during the day into the mid to upper 50s. So it has been probably the longest stretch of cool weather in the desert in the month of December that I can remember. But anyway, hope you all had a good New Year's Eve and a good New Year's Day here in the valley in Arizona. It's been all football with the Fiesta Bowl game and still have a couple of games tonight. And, of course, this year, for the first time in about 5 years, I did not cover the Tournament of Roses parade for RFD-TV. Had several emails from people wondering. And a couple of months ago, after the surgery situation, we came to a mutual agreement to take a one-year pass on covering the Tournament of Roses parade. It's a long day that starts at 2:30 in the morning and involves a tremendous amount of walking and climbing 77 steps to get up to the broadcast booth for RFD-TV. So really, for the first time in 5 years, I watched the Tournament of Roses parade yesterday, because when you're there to cover it, you really don't see it any differently than you do at home on your TV sets, because you sit with your back to the parade route and watch the parade on your TV monitor. So anyway, that's in response to some emails from people who said, missed you on the Tournament of Roses on RFD-TV, but I'll be back there next year, looking forward to that. The activity in the valley, besides football, though, they have a livestock show here in the Valley of the Sun. The 68th year that they've had the tournament of, or I should say, the Arizona National Livestock Show. And they hold it every year between Christmas and New Year's. And it's become known as the vacation show because of all of the people who spend part of the holiday season in the valley. And a lot of them are farmers and people from back in the Midwest that come in for the Arizona National Livestock Show. We're going to share some of the visits with you that we recorded earlier last week when we visited, spent a day at the Arizona Livestock Show. We'll share that with you. And some more of the interview that we did for the year end with the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, as he looked ahead to this year of 2016. But it's good to be with you here on this Saturday morning, 48 degrees in Scottsdale at the moment. And we're going to check in with the Director of Agriculture of the state of Arizona. And then we'll meet a real pioneer in the cattle industry in the state. So stay with us when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Mark Killian serves as Director of Agriculture for the state of Arizona, but he's an active cattleman as well. We just watched his pen be declared the grand champion's pen of heifers, sold for a pretty good price. How long have you been in the cattle business?
Our family's been in the cattle business in Arizona for over 100 years, and we've ranched in Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, Kentucky, and it's part of our life. I mean, agriculture is our life.
Well, it's good to have a director of agriculture that has that kind of lineage behind him. And how has your ranching experience helped in your job?
Well, one of the reasons they asked me to be the director is because our family's been involved in farming and ranching for over 100 years in citrus, cotton, wheat, alfalfa, cattle. And because of that background, the way I was raised, I'm familiar with the day-to-day operations of most farmers and ranchers. And so as a director, when we have to make decisions that impact agriculture, I'm a lot more sensitive to those operations. And we're there, in our opinion, to help agriculture succeed, not to create roadblocks for them.
So what is the biggest challenge faced by the agricultural community in this state?
Well, Arizona, the biggest challenge, I think, is that we do so many great things in agriculture people don't hear about.
Right.
I'm glad you're interviewing us, because we produce some of the best vegetables in America today. We have some of the best pecan groves in America today. We have some of the best cattle herds. We're some of the best new equipped dairies in the world right here in Arizona. And a lot of people don't hear that. In fact, you know, people make a lot about Florida oranges. You haven't lived till you've eaten a Mesa Arizona navel.
You're right. Yeah.
They are awesome. And so Arizona agriculture is growing. It's developing. It creates a $17 billion economy in the state of Arizona. The new technologies, our water conservation, there's so many positives about Arizona agriculture. And that's what our department is trying to do, is to help advocate for agriculture so people understand where their food comes from and where Arizona plays a vital role in that.
Agriculture is a major employer in your state.
It is. About 88,000 people depend on agriculture dollars for their employment. It's a $17 billion economy in Arizona. And of course, being an urban city, most people don't recognize that. But it is. It's growing. And a lot of people are coming to Arizona because of our good water management to set up new farms and ranches.
That's the Director of Agriculture for the state of Arizona, a cattleman who raised the champion pen of heifers at the Arizona National Livestock Show. But interesting background in the cattle industry, but also in the legislative activity in the state of Arizona. Well, let me see. Coming up, we're going to visit with a true pioneer in the cattle industry when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show. I am honored to visit with and present to you and my audience John Hayes, who was honored at the Arizona National Livestock Show as the Pioneer Stockman of the Year. John, I guess to be a pioneer, you have to have been
doing... You have to stay vertical.
Well, that's true, you do. But I take it you've been in the cattle industry a long time.
Oh, always. We've been in cattle business in our family since Revolutionary War days.
Really?
So,
and your operation is all in Arizona?
All in Arizona. We used to be, originally, it was part of California. And when it first started in 1912 in Arizona, to stock the ranches in California. And my dad ran this ranch. And then as a partnerships, deaths occurred, and more stockholders. We bought out the California people and kept the Arizona operation.
So tell me a little bit about the Arizona operation. Cow-calf and...
Cow-calf.
Okay.
It ran from 1,500 feet to almost 6,000 feet up in Yarnell, where you've been, in People's Valley down toward Wickenburg.
Yes.
So we had all kinds of climatic zones that we could use with the seasons.
Is it difficult to ranch in the desert, John? What's the biggest challenge?
Biggest challenge is rainfall everywhere, getting enough rainfall. But that was always a problem to fill tanks for water and make feed. So, but we had a large variety of environments, from sub-irrigated meadows in People's Valley to really dry deserts down by Wickenburg. So.
But let's talk about your concern over water, because you served in the Arizona legislature.
Right.
And what did you do on behalf of the state with water?
With water? Well, the first thing that I did when I went was to require that all land sales over 40 acres disclose what source of water was available. If none, say so on drilling, how deep it is, that sort of thing, because they were selling land by carload lots to people all over the world. And some of them had, if you're up above Prescott, toward Grand Canyon, you have to go 2,000 feet to get to water. And then there's very little of it. So most people can't afford to drill the well. So it was that was a big step to help stop land fraud.
And what about the Central Arizona Project?
That was actually in the works for so many years. It was a wonderful plan, and thank God we did it when we did, because we'd never get the money today to do it. And it's been it'll be the salvation of Arizona, provided we get some runoff in the Colorado River.
And that takes snow in the mountains.
Snow in the mountains. Snow in Montana, Wyoming, Colorado.
Right.
And we can't stay dry forever. So maybe this year will be a difference with El Nino years. Very hopeful of a snowpack being better.
Finally, John, last question. Any advice for young people who want to get into the cattle industry today?
Well, it's very, very difficult in Arizona because land is so expensive. There's so little land, 15% is privately owned. And to buy a ranch here takes an awful lot of capital. I would suggest they look from East Texas to Florida to East Coast, where you own all the land and you get lots of water. And that's, I think, has a lot more promise for cow-calf operators in the future. Here, private land is just outrageously expensive.
Some good advice from the Pioneer Stockman of the Year at the Arizona National Livestock Show. John, thank you and congratulations.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and come again next year.
Will do.
Good.
That's John Hayes in his late 80s, but still very active in the cattle industry, in state government in Arizona through his ability to impact the legislature and legislative activity. So interesting man indeed, and well loved by the cattle industry, as he was honored as the Pioneer Stockman of the Year in Arizona. Interesting history to the Pioneer Stockman of the Year. A lot of well-known names in the country. Last year, year before last now, back in 2014, Pioneer Stockman of the Year was Sandra Day O'Connor, who grew up on a ranch in Arizona, ultimately went to the Supreme Court. And she was honored as the pioneer in 2014. So God bless them all, and they continue to contribute to our way of life, and that's good. We're going to talk a little more about the history of the Arizona National Livestock Show, why it is always held in the Christmas week between Christmas Day and New Year's, and we'll get to that visit when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. 24 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, our first Saturday Morning Show of the year 2016. There was a time when all of us had to remember to put a new year whenever we wrote checks. Computers do that for us now, I guess, so we don't have to remember because, again, the computer remembers for us. But if you do any letters or anything, yeah, it's 2016. Well, the question arises, everybody else is observing holiday activities, Christmas and New Year's this time of the year, but why do ranchers and city folks spend some time between Christmas and New Year's going to a livestock show? Well, they've been doing it for 68 years here in the desert, and they're getting ready for a big 70th anniversary party, and then ultimately the 75th year for the Arizona National Livestock Show. The executive director of the Livestock Show is Michael Bradley, and in my visit with him at the show on Tuesday of last week, I asked him if there is a reason why they hold this show during the Christmas season.
Well, there is. This particular show, which started out as a Hereford show in 1948, has always been on the state fairground site, Orion, and it's always been the last part of December and usually early January. And obviously in Phoenix, what great weather do you typically have at that time of year? And so folks in the very, very cold country love coming out here.
And I would guess you get exhibitors from other states besides Arizona.
We absolutely do. In fact, we're up to 30 states coming here to the Arizona National this year. And in its history, the show has attracted all 50 states, actually, including Alaska and Hawaii.
What species of livestock are featured here at the show?
Well, we have beef cattle, of course, which is the big tradition of the show and big in this region. We have swine, both the breeding swine as well as barrows. We have market goats and then breeding sheep and market sheep. And now we've added 2 years ago a poultry show. Yes, and poultry is big in the West, both from an egg layer standpoint as well as broiler. We offer a turkey division as well as a broiler division.
And I know you like to honor the history and the tradition and the individuals. The Pioneer Stockman Award this year went to who and why?
Well, it went to a great gentleman, Mr. Hayes, who has an extremely incredible history in the state of Arizona for his great work in agriculture and in government, representing the people here in Phoenix in our government's headquarters. And so his long history of his family as well as himself in supporting agriculture has been second to none, really.
How important is 4-H and FFA participation?
Well, that's our mainstay, really. Our mission, which was recently adopted, is called Growing the Future. And what we believe is growing the future is about our youth. We offer up to $50,000 each year in scholarships for young people, all in 4-H and FFA. And those are the young people that are here with us today from the 30 states. We also have an adult division, but families are here. That's very critical. We're known as the Vacation Show. Because it does happen between Christmas and New Year's. And our own exhibitors really came up with that slogan, so why not adopt it? But Growing the Future is all about young people, young families, and you know how we keep this going, as well as honoring the past and the traditions that built our great industry.
And one final comment, you're in the heart of an urban area. What an opportunity to educate non-farm, non-ranch people. Do they turn out for the show?
They do, absolutely. And we've showcased that for many years, you know, our why we grow the food we do and how we grow the food. But we try to do it in an experiential way, we call it. So we have a program called Farm Experience. And so in Farm Experience, they get to learn new and different kinds of things, as well as traditional elements about farming and ranching in the West. One of the most fun and exciting things is the mutton busting. And so the kids are out here today just really enjoying that. We've got some other educational programs related to young families as well as kids. And, of course, they love to go through the barns, listen to the judges, touch the animals. And, you know, it's a great program to be able to offer that opportunity.
Michael Bradley, the executive director of the Arizona National Western Livestock Show. And it concluded on Friday, and they'll hold the Arizona National Horse Show coming up in this first week of the new year. But they love their cattle industry here in Arizona. They love their dairy industry because there are a lot of dairy cows being milked here in the desert. It's the Saturday morning show here on WGN Radio Chicago, and I'm Orion Samuelson with you this morning from Scottsdale, Arizona, with you until 6 o'clock, and during this time on our program, we're going to share with you some of the thoughts of Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. But before that, we say welcome to Samuelson Says. I'm Orion Samuelson, looking at the Arizona salute to pioneers and young people. If there's one thing I know, it's that All toilet bowls enjoy being rust-free. Hi, this is Orion, and this holiday season, give your toilet bowl RustGuard, the in-tank toilet bowl cleaner that protects against rust and hard water stains with every flush. Just one RustGuard tablet in the tank. It's really that easy. Log on to Wink, WHINK.com, to see all the fine clinging products from Wink. Pick up RustGuard this holiday season. Joy to the bowl. The rust is gone.
Not many people spend the week between Christmas and New Year's at a livestock show. But in Arizona, a lot of people attend a livestock show. For the 68th year, the Arizona National Livestock Show is staged the week between Christmas and New Year's. I had the opportunity to spend a day at the show the last week of December, and found it to be a great livestock show. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about paying tribute to young people and pioneers in the agricultural industry. They were honored at this show, as well they should be. The young people, the 4-H'ers and the FFA members who brought their beef cattle, their sheep, their hogs, even poultry that's produced here in Arizona, brought them all to the show and did their best to take home a blue ribbon. But I commend them, and to those animal rightists who condemn young people at county and state fairs and livestock shows, hear this. These are young people who are working for their future and our future. They're doing their best to raise quality livestock to feed America and the world. And so during the year 2016, to those animal rights groups, don't go to county or state fairs to harass these young 4-H and FFAers. They're not out doing any criminal acts. They are working for themselves and for a better country. And the leadership they get in 4-H and FFA gives them just that. But the other thing I like about this 68th National Arizona Livestock Show is the fact they pay tribute to history, to some of the pioneers. I attended the Pioneer Stockman Luncheon, where they honored John Hayes, who in 1912, with his family, formed a ranch in Peoples Valley, Arizona, still in the family, still being operated by the Hayes family. He served in the state legislature, worked on many different projects, but his first love is the cattle industry and agriculture. So, to the young and the mature, we start the year 2016 by paying tribute and recognizing your accomplishments. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. And we're sponsored by the folks at Wink Products Company, and we hope you'll get acquainted with their many fine products. The Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, sat down with me a few days before Christmas, and we talked about the year ending and the year ahead for our weekly television show, This Week in Agribusiness on RFD-TV. But we share the audio with you here on the Saturday morning show as well. And we'll take this break, and then we'll be back with the Secretary. For 7 years, at the end of the year, I've been able to sit down with the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, and talk about his year that's just ending and a look at the year ahead. We do that for our television audience and for our radio audience, so let's join the Secretary. We continue our discussion with the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack. We have been looking at the year just ending. I guess I have to mention farm prices. It has been a challenge for, well, not only grain producers, but livestock producers.
We obviously have seen lower prices, and sometimes you have to put it in the context of where prices were, and in some cases they were quite high. So the percentage drop in income obviously is a concern, but there's still great stability and resilience in the agricultural economy. Farmers have been very careful with their debt. Land prices have come down a bit, which may make it a little easier for younger people to get into the business. So, I'm not overly concerned today, in part because we have a farm bill, in part because we have a safety net that's working. Folks are receiving the agricultural risk coverage or the price loss coverage payments. The disaster assistance was obviously very helpful to livestock producers. And, you know, we're going to continue to focus on exports. We're going to continue to focus on trade agreements. And I think the future is going to continue to be bright. But we're going to go through a stretch here where prices are softer than we would like. And that is a result of a strong dollar and a strong American economy. That's a result of a weakening Chinese economy. It's a result of other countries producing bumper crops. And, you know, the great thing about agriculture is that people understand and appreciate it's cyclical in nature. But we've had six or seven pretty good years here. And if this is as low as it goes, we'll get through it.
Let me talk about crop insurance a little bit more. We still have metropolitan media like the Chicago Tribune saying it's a huge federal boondoggle. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's obvious that the folks don't quite understand how the system works. It's a partnership between producers, insurance companies, and the government. It's designed to prevent ad hoc disaster bills, which result in a significantly higher cost to the government and taxpayers if we have to, every time there's a disaster in agriculture, create a bill that Congress has to pass. We've seen how difficult it is to pass legislation, and we've seen what gets added to legislation that is in fact passing. It often becomes much more expensive than it needs to be. So we think this is actually a pretty sound process. And what's interesting is I travel overseas, and I've done quite a bit of that recently.
Yes.
People ask us about our crop insurance program. They're very interested in that risk management tool. They kind of like the framework of that partnership, and they want to know more about it, and should they develop a program like this. So, I think it's a matter of us continually educate those who may think they understand what crop insurance is, but when you explain to them that it's actually going to save taxpayer money, they become less concerned about it.
In this coming year, are we going to get the Trans-Pacific Partnership? I know you've worked hard on that.
We will, and here's why. For agriculture, it is clearly a net plus. The Farm Bureau recently endorsed the TPP. Virtually every one of our trade advisory committees that represent the various commodities have been supportive. So I know and I'm convinced it will help agriculture, but I think it will also help the entire American economy. Why? Because we're dealing with a group of countries that represent 40% of the gross domestic product globally. We're dealing with a set of countries located in the area of the fastest growing expanding middle class anywhere in the world. Asia is now 535 million middle class consumers to grow by 2.7 billion additional middle class consumers in the next 10 years to 15 years. Those people are going to want American goods. They're going to want American agricultural goods and our value added manufactured goods. So it creates a real opportunity for expanded growth. It also allows us to balance China's influence in Asia, which I think from a national security perspective is very important. So when you start making that case, you can quibble about this piece or that piece, but when you start making the broad case of the impact of this agreement, I think there'll be sufficient numbers of members of Congress, as there were with the Trade Promotion Authority vote in 2016, to get this passed.
If there is a one-sided agreement, it's not going to be a good agreement, is it?
No, that's right. Trade is a two-way street. And as we've seen with the WTO and the difficulties experienced with this multilateral effort, these bilateral and multilateral agreements with groups of countries are the way of the future. Getting 190 countries to agree on a trade agreement is very, very difficult, as we've seen with the current round of WTO discussions. Getting 11 or 12 countries to come together, you know this agreement must be good because there are other countries that weren't part of it that now want to be part of it. And the reason being is they didn't think it could get done. And once it did get done, they're going, hey, we don't want to be leaving. That we don't want to be left at the station here. We want to get on the train here. So I think you're going to see passage of this agreement, and I hope that it creates enough momentum and enough direction for us to have a similar type of opportunity with our European friends, because the issues there are much more complicated, more difficult, but the opportunities, the upside opportunity for agriculture is very huge.
Quick question on COOL. Will the retaliation take place?
I hope not. Congress has taken an action in the omnibus bill that's about to pass and is passing through the process. And that bill basically will repeal the sections of COOL that have been the subject of litigation. I don't think it necessarily limits the ability of a producer to put a label on it that says it's all American if they can establish and prove it. So I think at the end of the day, we're probably where we should have been and where we asked Congress to be a year ago. It's unfortunate. that we've had this discussion of retaliation, but I would sincerely hope that Canadians and Mexicans see that we've taken the action that they've been asking for and that we wouldn't be faced with any retaliation against other agricultural goods.
Have you had any personal conversation with the Minister of Agriculture in Canada?
I have. I visited with him shortly after his appointment to welcome him to the club. And basically indicated to him that my understanding and belief was that Congress would act. And I think we are going to have continue to have a good, close relationship, as I had with the previous minister. You know, Canada is now, again, our number one trading partner on the ag side. They supplanted China recently. So we obviously want to maintain good relations. And I've had an opportunity as well recently to meet with a new Mexican agricultural minister.
Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, and of course about 3 days after we sat in his office to record the interview, indeed Congress did pass the omnibus bill that, among other things, included language that really changed the rules of COOL so that retaliation from Canada and Mexico would not occur. We have more to talk about. Travels. He has spent the last 6 weeks of the year of 2015 doing a lot of traveling, and we'll talk about where and the reasons when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack may have spent more time in the air than in the office the last 5 or 6 weeks. Quickly rattle off the places you visited.
Well, it started in Cuba. An opportunity to be the third cabinet member of this administration to visit Cuba, then traveled to Japan and China for discussions on trade, and then took a little break and then went to Brussels to talk about the TTIP trade agreement and then to Paris to talk about climate change. So it's been a hectic couple of weeks, but I think a beneficial couple of weeks for U.S. agriculture.
That China meeting is an annual event, isn't it?
It is. It basically alternates every other year in China. We've got a close relationship with the Chinese ag minister. We still have frustrating conversations with the Chinese at times, especially as it relates to biotechnology. I'm hopeful that our conversation and our personal relationship will result in some approvals to some of the biotech traits that have been waiting approvals in China, because it really creates a situation when innovation here in the U.S. gets stalled because we're not convinced that we can have a global market opportunity, because China has basically been slow in approving these traits, and we've been working with them to try to get them to modernize their system.
Let's talk about Cuba. I have been saying for 3 decades the Cuban embargo just never worked. Do you think we're going to get rid of the embargo and start trading?
Well, we need to, and I would hope that at some point in time there's enough wisdom in Congress to get it done. There's a tremendous opportunity for U.S. agriculture. We at one time had 50% or so of that market, which is a $1.9 billion market. Today we have significantly less. Our European friends and our South American friends have been competitive. The way in which we can't provide credit, the way in which our terms and conditions require working through intermediary banks, makes it much more cumbersome and more expensive. They want American product. They need American product. And frankly, they could also provide us eventually with supplies of organic agricultural products, because they haven't really done much with their land. So they would be a prime producer of organic product, which we are now needing. We'd like to be able to create a relationship in agriculture that over time would create a closer relationship with that country and eventually turn an enemy into a friend. I think that's the goal, but it's going to take a while, and it's certainly going to take congressional action getting rid of that embargo.
But I think you're right. Agriculture can open a lot of doors.
You know, agriculture ought to be always a conversation that brings people together, doesn't divide people. We, unfortunately, find ways in which we sometimes use it as a divider instead of a united opportunity. But I think in this particular circumstance, the warm welcome that we received, I think there's a genuine interest in trying to figure out how we might be closer on agricultural issues.
Did you talk baseball at all?
Well, I did. It was basically the icebreaker. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, and the way the Cubs have recently, and then the White Sox have gotten new players, I'm concerned. So I went down there looking for maybe some talent. I didn't come back with anybody, but I planted the seed.
Well, you know, one of the stories I hear is that Fidel instituted the trade restrictions because he was turned down by the U.S. as a baseball player.
Well, that may be. I remember as a kid the discussion that we had, and the right decisions weren't made. So now it's time to reverse some of those decisions that weren't correct and really get an opportunity for these two countries to get closer.
I have to ask one question that a viewer wanted me to ask the Secretary of Agriculture. When you're in Washington, what is a typical day like for you?
Well, it can vary. A series of meetings, almost 15 to 30-minute blocks of meetings with staff on a variety of issues. Oftentimes I go and give speeches to commodity groups, to organizations that are involved in rural development, to nutrition groups, to school officials, to county and city officials, and those who are involved in conservation and forestry. The breadth of this department requires me to be sort of an expert in so many different things that I have an opportunity to speak in a lot of different venues. So it's giving speeches, it's meeting with staff, and it's trying to figure out ways in which we can improve the work here at USDA. I'm proud of the fact that we're actually operating on a budget that's less than it was when I first became secretary. And it's in large part because of the great work of the folks who work here figuring out ways to do more with less. And we've had record achievements in virtually every mission area, even though the budget is less than it was 7 years ago.
So what time do you get up and what time does your day end?
Well, I usually get to the office sometime a little after 8 o'clock. I have a cup of coffee to get me started. The day probably ends, if you include the work that I do at home, 9:30, 10 o'clock. And that's basically 6 days a week. Saturday mornings I usually spend 5 or 6 hours taking a look at stuff. Sunday evenings I usually take a look at what I need to know for the following Monday. So it's a grind, and I think that's one of the reasons why so few people have stayed in a job like this for the time that I have stayed in. I think I'm closing in on Henry Wallace in terms of longevity. There are only two or three other secretaries that have been in this position longer, and I think it's important. The continuity is important, particularly for a bureaucracy, and that's one of the reasons why I have stayed, because I think there's still work to be done. But the longer you stay, the more institutionalized and cemented the changes that you're making become, and I think the longer impact that you have on rural America. I will tell you, we're having a tremendous impact on rural America. And when this history of this administration is written, I think people are going to be surprised at the level of investment and level of activity in rural parts of this country. It's unprecedented.
Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, who spent about 45 minutes with me in the office a few days before Christmas, and we share his comments from our television show with you here on the Saturday morning show. Well, the new year gets off to a fast start. This week I'll be traveling to Tucson, Arizona on the 6th, the Wednesday, and we'll be spending Thursday there. It's the annual gathering of the Farm Foundation, which I've been a part of for many years. But one of the reasons I'm excited about attending this year's event, two former secretaries of agriculture will be on the program. The former secretary and special trade representative, Clayton Yeider, and then Mike Johanns, Secretary of Agriculture in the past few years before Tom Vilsack moved into the office. So I'll be in Tucson this week, Farm Foundation. A lot of people from around the country will be there for that event. And then beginning next Friday, January 8th, we start in Orlando, Florida, with the annual convention of the American Farm Bureau Federation. That one is going to be an interesting one because Bob Stallman, who has served as president of the American Farm Bureau Federation for 16 years, announced last year during the summer he would not seek re-election. And I think the latest count says there are 4 people who are running for election to the presidency. I know 2 of them, Kevin Rogers, who is president of the Farm Bureau here in Arizona, producing cotton and other crops, is one of the candidates. And then longtime friend Don Vilwalk, who served for years as president of the Indiana Farm Bureau Federation, also in that campaign to become president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. Before all of that happens, though, on Wednesday of next week, on the 6th of January, Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack and the U.S. Department of Agriculture will honor Bob Stallman's tenure as president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. Secretary Vilsack and Deputy Secretary Krista Hardin will proclaim January 6 as Bob Stallman Day, Bob Stallman Appreciation Day, with an official proclamation in recognition of Bob's commitment to strengthening rural American families and communities. That'll take place next Wednesday at 10 o'clock in the morning in the Witten patio at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So, fast start to the new year. We're looking forward to covering it for you, and we thank you as always for joining us here on the Saturday morning show. Always thanks to Bob Ferguson, who engineers this entire venture, with me sitting in the home studio in Arizona and doing all the good work to make sure everything happens. Thank you for joining us on the Saturday morning show. And this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.